The third and final speaker for today is Dr. Michel Allary, and he is a professor in the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine at Laval University in Quebec and the Director of Population Health Research at Quebec University Hospital. And he is going to talk about targeting core GC groups, whether it's feasible and whether it's effective.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to talk about targeting core groups for gonorrhea control. Is this feasible? Do we have impact with that? So the outline of my talk is as follows. I will first talk about the concept of core group. Maybe people think that they know a lot about that, but it's not so straightforward. And then, is there evidence of impact of targeting core groups as a gonorrhea control strategy overall? And then we cannot talk about the epidemiology of gonorrhea right now without talking about resistance to some extent. So we'll talk about the role of core groups in the emergence and dissemination of antimicrobial resistance to antimicrobial resistant gonorrhea. And we'll talk about the feasibility. We told about the control strategy aimed at core groups in presence of gonorrhea resistance. And we'll talk of feasibility of core group interventions for NG control. And some conclusions. Okay. The concept of core group, as most of you know, has first been evoked by York, Etcote, and Knoll in 1976. And it was defined as subpopulation with a sufficiently high NG prevalence for a preemption effect. What is this, a preemption effect? Is that, you know, your proportion of non-susceptible people, because they are already infected, is relatively high. So there will be some people who will be in contact with a significant proportion of people who are in contact with cases of gonorrhea who won't acquire it. Okay, it's a purely mathematical concept to start with. So though the concept of core group is a prominent paradigm in STI epidemiology, there is some confusion about the meaning of the core. And then here I found in a review of these definitions that was published in the mid-90s, some definitions that have been used in different papers from 1976 to 1994. So you can see the wide variety of that. Groups with gonorrhea prevalence more than 20%, sex workers, persons with many sexual contacts, very sexually active, asymptomatic infectious people, census tracts that are a source of 50% of more or more of reported cases, individuals with more than two infected contacts, people repeatedly infected, people with high rate of acquisition of new partners, the smallest possible population whose removal will lead to a reproductive number below one, people who on average generate more than one new case of infection, people with more than five sexual partners per year. As you can see, that's very different from one paper to the other. Okay, so basically, if you look at that and try to put some order in that concept, there are three main perspectives for the definition of core groups. The first perspective is mathematical and is related to the classical formula, is that the reproductive number is proportional to the transmission probability, the number of contacts in a given time frame, and the duration of infection. And then what we see is that generally, we have R-naught that is more than one in the core and less than one outside the core, and that the disease remains endemic outside the core only through interaction of the general population with the core. Okay, so that's the first concept, that's the theoretical concept. So then there have been a clinical and epidemiologic perspectives. The most often used concept in there are STI repeaters, so people who come to clinics with more, you know, repeatedly for STIs, and geographic cluster of cases. That's the most often used concept in that perspective. And then there's the sociocultural perspective, which is group with behavior increasing risk. So that is what has been the most often used, like sex workers, migrant workers, MSM in some instances, etc. So, okay, so here's an example from HIV, but it's still relevant to gonorrhea. So you can complicate a bit the picture by putting in there a bridging group. Okay, because you can have a real core group. That's an example with female sex workers in the African context, let's say. Okay, so you have here, does that work? It doesn't work. Oh, yeah, it works. Okay, so you have the core here with very high prevalence of female sex workers. That could be HIV, that can also be gonorrhea, as you can see. And then you have the men going to see the sex workers. And then, you know, the persistence or the generalization of the epidemic will depend on, you know, these men will give the infection to women in the general population. And it is the interaction within the general population that will determine if this, you will have a really generalized epidemic or a more concentrated epidemic. And the concept of core group intervention is that if you block infection at that level, for example, by high level of condom use in transactional sex, so then you will control your epidemic. And that works also for gonorrhea. Okay, next one. So what is the impact of STI core group interventions on gonorrhea? In general, on STI to start with. So there has been lots of things that has been written on theoretical impact. Okay, so at Cott and York a bit later in 1982, they said that, you know, their concept, they said that the most important group to target was the infectors of cases seen at STI clinics. So the problem, if you do partner notification, is very hard to know if you're treating the people that have been infected by the index case you see, or if they are the infectors of the case you see. You can sometimes find that, but it's not so easy. So it might not be such a practical way to go. So then Over and Piot in 1993, they did a mathematical model showing that mass screening and treatment of multiple transmitters would prevent 10 times more cases than treatment of other cases. Okay, but again, it's not very practical because you don't know in advance and you don't know to do your mass screening who are these multiple transmitters. So then there are many examples of, you know, modeling studies using the sociocultural perspective that, you know, the core groups intervention will have a big impact on HIV if you look on the HIV infection. So you have Boilly et al. That published a lot on that, and Garnett et al. So there are, however, some empirical data showing that core group interventions may have an impact on the gonorrhea. Okay, this is from my own work in Benin in West Africa. So here you can see we started sex worker interventions. Here, and what it was, the interventions was, you know, many, many things, but, you know, the aim of that was to increase a lot condom use. And it was also to try to screen and treat STIs. But now screening and treating STIs was not based on lab tests. It was kind of a modified syndromic approach, which had a sensitivity of about 75% and a specificity of about 75%. So it's not great. But then with that, you can see the gonorrhea rates from 42% in 1993. You know, lots of companies doing new tests for gonorrhea were running after me to do evaluation of their tests that I did for some time. But then it came down to 2.8% in 2005. Okay, so, and we have a kind of a natural experiment here because there was no such intervention in other cities than Cotonou in Benin. And then we started around 2001 to have a similar intervention. And again, you can see the very fantastic drop in gonorrhea prevalence. Yeah, I won't talk about the HIV on this slide. Okay, so at least there's this example, and in parallel in the general population, not entirely in parallel, but there's a household-based survey with gonorrhea prevalence in 1998, and there's another one in 2008 in the same city. Okay, so 98 is a bit after the start of the intervention. We already had some effect in the sex workers. Okay, in 2008, unfortunately, after 2005, it's hard to know exactly the reason, but you know the intensity of the sex worker interventions decreased, and there might be a role of emerging resistance because there's almost no resistance data in that country after 2003. In 2003, it was still fully susceptible to CPRO. Okay, but we had a decrease in the general population from 1.1% in men to 0.3%, and in women from 1% to 0.5%. from 98 to 2008. So it's apparently it had also an impact in the general population where there was not much going on in terms of STI control. But there are also other evidence. Come on. Okay. So, presumptive periodic treatment of female sex workers in high-prevalence settings have been shown to have an impact on gonorrhea. Maybe not so much on HIV, but it has an impact, clear impact on gonorrhea in Kenya and in South Africa also. Syndromic approach, a bit like we did in Benin, was shown also to work very well in the India Avan program. Okay, and also when you look at that, in fact, there has been a major decrease in gonorrhea in Canada and the USA and most developing countries from the mid-80s to the mid-90s following the start of the HIV epidemic. And we all know that that was due to very high increase of condom use in MSM. And again, it had a real impact. You know, the number of cases of gonorrhea in a country like Canada was so low around 1994 that, you know, even I wrote a paper that maybe we were near elimination outside the context of imported cases, so I was really wrong, unfortunately. Okay, so the core groups and resistant NG, in about all cases of resistant strains to different antibiotics, you can see a big role that the emergence most of the time started in core groups. So if you look at PPNG, penicillinase producing Neisseria gonorrhoeae, so you can see that sex workers were involved in that epidemic at the beginning in 76 to 83. Again, female sex workers and foreign laborers in the Netherlands a bit later. In Los Angeles at the beginning of the 80s, it was female sex workers where it started also. Different definition of a core group, geospatial core in Dade County in 85, so that you had really census tracts with very much higher prevalence, street gangs in Colorado Springs in the late 80s, and female sex workers also in Toronto in 1984. And you have a similar picture, come on. Okay, for chromosomally mediated penicillin resistance. You can see sometimes it's not the sociocultural perspective that has been identified, sometimes other perspective of core groups like NG repeaters in Baltimore in 1983. Again, tetracycline-resistant gonorrhea, the same problem. Okay, quinolone-resistant gonorrhea first started in the Western Pacific region in the early 90s. It was first in female sex workers and MSM. Again, in the UK in the 1990s, it started with imported cases, but then it became also mainly concentrated in MSM and female sex workers. From 1999 in the USA, first was related to foreign travel and then more to MSM. And the spread to South America and Africa after 2000 was mainly in FSW and MSM. And you can see that the prevalence of Cipro-resistant gonorrhea in Kampala in 2008 was 80% in female sex workers and 37% in male STI clinic patients. So core groups, you know, seem to be, you know, the STI men, STI clinic patients might be core groups as well. Female sex workers maybe even more, and you see that the prevalence of resistance is even higher in that group. Come on, doesn't want to change. Okay. So, specnomycin resistance, again, in the mid-80s, there's not been so much of that because you can see it was in female sex workers and U.S. military personnel in the Philippines and Korea in the mid-80s. Azithromycin resistance, first case in the USA was a male NG repeater in 1993. An outbreak in Kansas City in 1999-2000 was linked to female sex workers. Most cases elsewhere, there's not real epidemiological situation information to conclude. Cephalosporin resistance is the most recent one. Everyone knows the story, you know, started in Japan in 2000 with the elevated MICs, started in sex workers, was linked to sex workers. Again, in the UK and the Netherlands, there was a link to MSM. In the USA, the first cases in Hawaii had a link to Japan. And then we can see at the end that the recent emergence of the extensive resistance to cephalosporin in Japan that was evoked by Dr. Rice a bit earlier and also was in female sex workers. And we had similar strains in France and Spain among MSM a little bit more recently. So core groups intervention versus the emergence of resistance, because it's easy when you don't have resistance, you know, it's really convincing the evidence that it would work to target core groups to have a decrease in the overall gonorrhea epidemic. But, you know, so in that modeling study published in 2012 by Chan and collaborators, there was a very different picture if you had a presence of resistance. Okay, so what is was found is that even if you had initial control of your epidemic with gonorrhea prevalence, you had a real rebound, and the time varied, but let's say within 10 to 20 years, there was a rebound to the same level of epidemic if there was resistance. And the thing that was really difficult is also that it wasn't help at all, even if you change your antibiotic, after a threshold of more than 5% resistance to that antibiotic. Because, you know, these people are so much at risk, so you have the selection for the resistant strains that will get on propagating in that population first in the core groups, and then it will go out in the other populations, and then you'll have the problem will resurge at the same level. Okay, and in fact, what was better than changing treatment after a certain level of resistance was treating randomly with antibiotics. Just change, you know, you pick up in the antibiotic that where you have some susceptibility, and you give it at random. That was delaying a lot the rebound by 10, 20 years more. But, you know, there's no one who would do that in practice, you know, because then what you do to the actual patient there is probably not the best thing you could do. So me, when I went through that, you know, I thought, is that could be a rationale for dual treatment? The fact that randomly treating would help. Okay, I was not sure. That's why I put a question mark. I'm less convinced even when after hearing the first presentation this morning. But the thing that came from that paper as well was that basically primary prevention using condom promotion in the core groups, which has been shown to be feasible in many settings, is likely more important than screening and treatment in the presence of resistance if we want to control the epidemic through core group interventions. Okay, so if I look at the feasibility of these core group interventions, so it's quite well established that, you know, among FSWs in low and middle income countries, it's feasible, it's an easy group, it's generally a relatively easy group to identify and access, at least for the professional sex workers who account for the most of the infections. But this feasibility is highly compromised by the spread of resistant NG strains. And you know, you would be surprised that probably, I would say many, if not most countries in Africa are still using ciprofloxacin for treating gonorrhea. And in fact, there's very poor surveillance of gonorrhea resistance in Africa. And you know, there's no Africa-wide GASP system that exists currently. There's nothing functional at the continent level in Africa. And that's a real problem. If I look at other groups, it's sure that, you know, for MSM in general, forgetting about resistance is still a bit more difficult than with female sex workers in developing countries. First, in the developing countries, it's still a very hidden population, difficult to access. In high-income countries, you know, there's a wide variety of different level of risk throughout the MSM population, and it would be very difficult to define the whole MSM population really as a core group. And we are faced by the fact, and that's been an evidence, okay, is that we had, unfortunately, a strong decrease in condom use in the MSM population after the art has become available in 1996. So can we use a clinical epidemiologic perspective for core group interventions in general? It's sure that we can use it to some extent for opportunistic screening, especially when we have evidence of concentration in geographical areas. And it's sure that partner notification, by definition, is a strategy that is related to a clinical epidemiological perspective. The thing is that we have much more impact there if we are able to treat the people who are multiple transmitter and are not so easy to identify. And it showed that for any core group intervention to have impact on NG, condom promotion or other preventive prevention strategies in general are needed. It showed that there's new things in the field of HIV that can be detrimental to core group interventions. You know, it showed that will we have, with the treatment as prevention, will we have even more decrease in condom use? Will we have more decrease in condom use if we, in the people using PrEP? That's all things that, you know, might be very good for HIV, but can be additional threat to gonorrhea control. Okay, so in conclusions, core group interventions have proven effective in NG control in the past. This is compromised by the spread of the highly resistant strains and multiple resistant strains. Screening and treatment is insufficient for primary prevention. Dual therapy, I'm not sure if it's really needed. I'm less sure now. And we need a worldwide functional network for assessing gonorrhea resistance. And I think what is needed now is that if you look at the WHO guidance for developing for in general, the guidance is to say you do resistance testing, and then when you have 5% resistance, you change treatment. The problem we have right now is that in most African countries, okay, there's basically no resistance testing at all. It just does not exist. Okay, and the thing is, it's very hard to find funds to do that at this stage. I see programs to treat sex workers every month, okay, with Cipro, okay, and what are they doing? They are doing nothing, okay? So there's probably a need for treatment guidance for low and middle income countries without resistance data that would be needed from WHO on the relatively short term. On that, thank you for your attention.